The Overview is a production of ChanManV TV. Find out more about the show at ChanManV.tv. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 62 of The Overview. I'm ChanManV, and I'm joined by a trio to my left and an invisible person down to my bottom. We've got an interesting mix here, but I want to welcome Gil Frost, Hex, and ZP to the show. What's up, guys? They're all in Denver right now.
We're all in Denver. We are in Casa de Gilfrost right now, and yes. Just happy to make some time to get on here, where we have somehow replicated the same seating arrangement as we have in Contenders and Carbon.
It was absolutely intentional.
Yes.
We actually put a pretty good amount of work into that.
Yes. It took a lot of setup and organization, time to organize all that. Gil, me on the left, is obviously appropriate.
I felt really weird. I was on the other side.
You can't really mess with primal forces of the universe.
That's right. Well, Ben was originally, I was expecting Ben to be here, but unfortunately he's in sunny Hawaii enjoying a vacation.
How terrible.
So he wasn't able to make it today. Well, he'll be back next week. But we've got a lot to talk about today. And these guys, obviously, hosting, casting, Contenders, be a big part of the show. But also, we've got TakeOver 2, as well as PTR patch with some balance changes, as well as a new map. Really hyped about that. And then, of course, a bit of news involving some players, teams, all that good stuff like we always do. And then Q&A at the end, of course, if you guys have any questions. We didn't have any emails this week, so if you want to email your questions, you can to theoverview@chanmanv.tv, or just hang around Twitch chat. We'll take some questions, like always, from Twitch chat. All right, well, why don't we start off with PTR patch, and then we'll jump into Contenders. We'll figure we'd get talk about the game, the actual game itself. And PTR, I think the day after the show, or maybe even the night after the show, they announced some changes, and some pretty big changes to three of the characters. And let me bring that up real quick. In particular, McCree, Reaper, and Roadhog. So why don't we talk about the McCree one first? And there's a change to Deadeye. So targets now begin locking after 0.2 seconds instead of 0.8. And then damage accumulated over the first 1 second increased from 20 to 80. And then damage per second.
Right. Yeah. We should just go right to the McCree main.
Exactly. ZP.
Well, okay, so McCree right now, this is clearly a change in the right direction. He's not getting nerfed at all in exchange for this. It's actually just a gift. It's going, hey, McCree. We noticed that when you activate your ultimate, you're more likely to lose a team fight than you are the win. Let's change that a little bit. And, I mean, we'll see how it pans out. It could be a very, very big change in him, because now you're going to have the freedom for McCree to not only be sneakier and get more rewarded for your Deadeyes, but I'm also curious about synergy with things like Nano Boost, where Nano Deadeye has been a thing. Mm-hmm. And now that you're combining it potentially with a much faster Deadeye, I think the odds that McCree is able to pop a Deadeye in the right situation and get at least one kill is going to be really good. And just one pickoff can be enough. But if you end up getting 2, 3, 4, whatever it may be, the higher end will be a little bit rare in comp. But if it stands as it is, and I haven't got a chance to play it in PTR, I think, if nothing else, it's a good change.
I think that Blizzard is finally understanding that ultimates are mostly for 1 and 2 kills and not 5 kills or 6 kills like they used to be. Like, if you look at Barrage nowadays, Barrage is like a 1 or 2 kill kind of thing, and they're bringing Deadeye to that aspect as well. So these kills in competitive play are not going to be in the top of the Reddit. Like, they're not going to be top of the Overwatch subreddit because they don't get 6 kills. But I think it's a smart play. I think it's really well done what they're doing with McCree. And actually, I think Reaper needs to be in a better place. I think Reaper is a good change that they're making, too, that you don't have to rely on picking up orbs. It's a smart change.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see this hopefully unlock some of those really good McCree players. Mm-hmm. You know, Immortals, definitely a team that comes to mind when that is. And, you know, because I'm always just rooting for Grim Reality. Come on, just do it.
I know. Everybody wanted to pick
Where's Valutaja? Where is Valutaja? Okay,
my main hope here in the end is that with McCree getting changed and buffed a bit, is that I hope that we get somewhat more parity between McCree and Soldier, because what has historically happened in Overwatch over time is that when one of the two gets changed, you might have maybe a week or two where teams are deciding, do we still want to run McCree or still want to run Soldier? And then eventually you have a situation where one of them ends up being run like 95% of the time compared to the other. And it's been McCree in the backseat in recent times, even though we have seen players come out and have very good McCree showings. I mean, you take a look at players like Taibu, they're still like, actually, I still like running McCree. So for players like him, it's a straight buff. I will be curious to see how the Soldier-McCree ratio is, because you got to think that given the overlap in the roles to some extent, that the design dream in an extent would have them be used evenly for different situations rather than sort of what's been in recent times where people lean on Soldier more so than
the dream, at least, is to have certain situations where some characters will be good, you know, especially overlapping DPS characters. Yeah, with McCree, I mean, the only time we've seen it is, you know, maybe when pharmacies going crazy, or they're just so frustrated with tracers, just like, screw it, man, we got to get our McCree in there and slow things down. But overall, I think we might even see some plays where we're, you know, we're just we'll see a quick Deadeye, and then like I was talking to Hex about, it's just going to be a quick reload too, right? A lot of people use that trick just to get a reload to get one kill, and we might see that a little bit more too.
I think it'd be great for against the pharmacy combo too, because I think you can pop tactical visor whenever you see a pharmacy, but if the time is lower on Deadeye, you can pop that to deal with a combo as well.
Yeah, because right now you can't even pop Deadeye really to deal with Mercy. Because, I mean, unless they're really out of position, because normally, you know, in the pros playing Fire Mercy are going to be, they're going to be not too far away from cover, hopefully.
You just eat a damage.
Or there's a rocket to your face.
It's difficult to stay alive long enough as a McCree at Deadeye to actually get things done, because we're not back in early beta where people are just like, wait, I don't even know the maps. I don't even know idea where McCree is. I barely even know what he looks like. And then you go to Reddit with six kills. No, people have definitely adapted it.
All right, let's talk about Reaper. You mentioned Reaper a little bit here. The Reaping passive. So they're removing health orbs, but now you regain 20% of all damage done to heroes as health. So a very different way of healing up as Reaper. And this one's definitely more in, I would say, more real time versus after battles. You know, you have to win battles to actually heal up. So how is this going to affect one-on-one engagements between a lot of the characters, Hex?
I'm not certain it's going to affect one-on-one engagement. I think you'll see a lot of him more on the assault maps, which we saw a little inkling of Liquid ran him and other teams, even Rise Nation ran him towards the end. Close quarters, right? You're going to be alive. You're going to do all this damage right up in the close of face of people. I also think that now with that change, you might see him on more control maps as well, that you can do it on like a Koi Pond, you can do Lijiang. I think it's a great change, and he needs to be brought back in the meta, because when people run four tanks, there's really no answer to it. Reaper has to be an important part of this game.
Well, you hit on the key word there. The key word is tank, because if you take a look at the mechanics of this, is that it's a 20% life leech effectively, which means that if you can get in on a tank, what would happen a lot previously is that the Reaper would just sort of get bopped by focus fire and like, okay, you might do some damage to the tank, but you're immediately going to fall down. Mm-hmm. In an actual fight where you're laying in the amount of damage that a Reaper is, that 20% is actually very significant in keeping him up. So I think we could see such scenarios where the Reaper just lives for absurd amounts of times against teams that are a little bit tank heavy. I think we'll have to see how it pans out, but it could very much act as a big sort of a disincentive the teams run even three tank, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, and I was going to say, a lot of teams right now are still clinging to that three tank, and there's plenty of teams that can play anything between 3-4 DPS and three tank, but there are a few teams that really seem to rely on that, and I'm curious to see if this is going to punish those teams even more, really force them to pick up, you know, some new strategies and potentially even look at their rosters, because
he might end up being like the third DPS, because teams will run still a Tracer, as you always should, just still run a Tracer and a Genji, but then you just throw that Reaper in as well instead of a Roadhog. Reaper's going to replace Roadhog, ironically enough.
So here's a question. Is Reaper essentially invincible outside of stuns when he's doing his ultimate now?
I haven't seen it.
I mean, he's going to be healing, right? Like every bit of damage he does, he's going to be instantly healing. So I'm wondering how killable he is now when he does his bloom.
You still flashbag and hook him. I mean,
of course, stuns. Of course, stuns.
Still the same problems with the ultimate. Yeah,
right. And I mean, you think back to even in the Beyblade meta ages ago, God bless E-League way back when. But you still, teams dealt with a spinning, super fast top Reaper that did incredible amounts of damage.
Kill anything
and was basically unkillable because of Nana Boost. So if teams could deal with it somewhat, then I think they'll deal with the tamer life leeching version.
I don't think the ultimate really has changed much, because when you were ultimating as a Reaper anyway, you were rolling over those soul orbs anyway. You were already getting healing, so I don't think that changes too much.
All right. Okay, let's talk about Roadhog. So I think this is pretty significant change to him. This is more of balancing Roadhog more so than just making them better or not. And with Roadhog, the hitbox is reduced by 20 because his head is enormous right now. So that's a good change there. And then Scrap Gun, bullet damage decreased by 33%, but the fire rates increased by 30%. And then the clip size, thank God, is increased from 4 to 5, which, you know, it's always been a stickler for me trying to keep track of when to reload with him. What do you guys think about that, ZP?
Well, Roadhog has already been getting played a bit less in recent times. Still, some teams still very much run him, but he's been a bit in the downturn, and this certainly, I feel, hurts. Now, we were actually at a conversation about it earlier. We all have different opinions where it hurts, but I guess born out of conversations, I think it probably hurts the solo Roadhogs the most. Like, if you are pulling a Harblow, if you're pulling an Evermore, you're just like, I'm actually going to be a mile behind them and go for solo kills. Right. That's going to be a lot more difficult.
Your team has to be finishing your hooks now. It's not just like the solo shots that you're getting the entry kill. You need to have the team around. Actually, I think it helps McCree a lot. You can get that hook and headshot like right away. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's good overall that the team has to play around your hooks rather than you just being able to solo queue and pulling those hard blues.
It's like 9 months too late for Cloud9 in that match versus Harblow, where Harblow basically solo won the game.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm actually really excited about that fifth round, you know, that get a little bit more scrap in the battlefield, because they're already like giving him benefits for staying with his team and just like, you know, fighting against the other team with your team.
With shield breaking.
The shield breaking. So now he's going to be even more of a shield breaking monster, which also could, I mean, we'll see how that interacts with McCree's and soldiers.
I would say the biggest thing of note here is that comp play, we'll see what the effects are, but certainly a big nerf to Roadhog in a lot of forms of just solo queue competitive play, right? Where what do you see when people queue up in the comp? You don't have a lot of people that are necessarily working together super well, and you do have a lot of Roadhogs that are able to get a lot done while not working with their team. The changes certainly hurt those Roadhogs the most, and you see them the most when you just decide, hey, I want to play some Overwatch, I'm going to go into a game. Well, if you're a Roadhog hero in that sense, you probably will have a rougher time post-patch.
Right. All right. Well, another thing that was added to PTR is the new map, which pretty hype for a lot of people, given that we've been waiting for a new map here. So let me show this video that we have. I know you guys didn't get a chance to play it. I definitely got a chance to play about 5 games or so. But man, the map is beautiful. I mean, you guys could probably get a sense of it even just from the video or whatnot, but it's my favorite aesthetically.
It's not surprising. All the maps in Overwatch are beautiful. The people do not love the aesthetics of Overwatch.
No, but I'm saying like this one, you're right.
Actually wrong.
You're right. But compare those to this one's one of my favorite. There's all these hydroponic, you know, there's like a hydroponic lab and they have all this greenery and stuff in it. It looks so cool. And it's an assault map for those of you that haven't gotten a chance to play it too. So I kind of want to get your opinion on that. Like having Blizzard make another assault map, what are your thoughts on that? Just given that it's always been highly criticized, just that format.
Well, as far as that goes, I mean, assault is a key mode that is being prioritized in tournaments. We are going to be playing assault maps seemingly for quite a long time to come. So getting more variety in assault maps is good. As far as that goes, I mean, I realize that there's cynicism from some of the community in regards to their reception of assault maps, but fact is, assault maps feature prominently in every Overwatch tournament, so having more variety there so the viewers get to see different looks, different strategies, etc., this map being added is a good thing.
Blizzard has clearly heard people about their criticisms of assault maps. If you look back at Anubis used to be different. Yeah. Then they opened up left side because they understood.
Left side, you say?
Left guy. they understood that there were issues with it. So I think as a mode, as a game type, it is still viable, and they're trying for it. But they obviously have ears on it. They're obviously listening.
Well, and the answer for a lot of problems like that, you know, the community and a lot of people will immediately just say, no more assaults, or this is bad in general. rather than how can we make it better? You know, and I think at the very least, maybe this is a good opportunity where they can tinker around with it a little bit. Because from what I've seen from the map, it's definitely laid out differently, and it's got a lot of interesting new features from a strategic standpoint. And that might even enable them to make better maps in the future for Assault, and maybe even tinker around with the old ones with what they learn, what we learn from Lunar Colony. So
yeah, it's definitely a bit different than some of the others. I mean, the points or the you know the control points or whatever are very wide open and different levels too. But we'll obviously talk about it a little bit more once everybody gets to play it. I was, not a control point. My teammates were...
It's Assault.
Sorry, not controller, but the objective points. I was calling it the wrong thing. But my teammates must have hated me the first time I played it because I was just like roaming and like completely lost like in different areas of the map while the objective point was like way on the other side. But it's going to be a lot of fun seeing how people adapt to it. But yeah, the other thing that they added was the anti-gravity effect that you can add to any map. And if you hop on a PTR right now, there is an anti-gravity mode or like this preset game. And I was assuming that I would jump into Lunar Colony, but then all of a sudden they put me in Eichenwald and we had everybody just floating in the air, throwing, you know, junk rats, throwing their grenades everywhere. And it was pretty interesting even trying to figure out what character you could abuse it the most.
Well, I don't know if you've been, but there is no gravity in Germany. Frankfurt is just
really, really
the entirety of it. Yeah,
just like just
that's why they have the best raves.
that's why Berlin is so fun.
Yeah. gotcha. Okay, well, anyways, everybody that is very curious about it, go check it out. You can go download the PTR right now, and wouldn't be surprised if all this stuff gets pushed out next week. Or have they given a date for it? I don't think they have, right? It's usually like 2 weeks.
It's generally Tuesdays.
Yeah, generally about 2 weeks. So we'll see when that gets released. But okay, let's talk about the events. So obviously the big one in which all three of these guys are working right now is Overwatch Contenders. And the NA qualifiers happened this past weekend. Lots of stuff going on there. Lots of teams. I mean, it was crazy how many teams ended up participating in it. But want to get your overall opinions, just I guess, you know, just given that it's finished and overall, like how it went for you guys. Gil, I'll start with you.
Oh boy, put me on the spot. Well, yeah. Honestly, so for those of you that might not know, I am not just hosting the event. I'm heavily involved with the production. So like the weeks and months leading up to it, really the month leading up to it. So we had a very short time frame. I was really focused on the planning for it. So I'm just glad that it went off without very many hitches or almost any hitches. And because, you know, when you have 400 teams a day, that can be very difficult. Yeah.
Wow.
And bringing on new casting tag. Glad you guys were here. Thank you so much. But I mean, the new talent was amazing. And Monty and Doa, of course, they've, you know, done it before.
As their first Overwatch
out. Yeah. So, and, I mean, the teams were happy. We did a lot of new stuff with the spectator mode.
Oh, which
we still have to fine-tune that a lot, you know, with ZP. And we've all talked about this quite a bit. Like, how are we going to continue to evolve that? But I'm really happy with it.
No, there were some good things in terms of the spectator that I really appreciated, noticed instantly. Like the preview, like you had the pip, but it was basically a preview for where you're going to show full screen and a lot of panning type of angles and things like that. How many observers do you guys have?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah, we have two observers. We're in a very tight space, and so we literally can't fit more observers in the space. but in the future, I mean, this has actually even just been a good example of what we could do with X number of observers.
Full out control room,
Be able to do what we did this time with just one free cam and one person focusing on first person views. Yeah, the sky's the limit.
We had a post-production meeting the other night where everyone's talking about, like, everyone's doing a great job, and I'm sitting there thinking, I have the easiest job in the room right now. Like,
right?
Everyone else is doing the actual work, and I'm just talking about this Spur Mercy combo maybe hitting a rocket. Like, it was amazing. The streets have been great. I think it's phenomenal. It's like 400 teams. 400 teams and like one team had a complaint. Like, that's amazing to do. Yep. As someone who's run an admin before, it's impossible to do. Teams are hard to wrangle, so it's been wonderful.
The admins were miracle workers, and I just want to give a special shout out to them. I mean, there's a lot that went on production-wise, but whenever you're dealing with a wide-open tournament, I mean, you think about the level of things that you have to deal with. You have to deal with everything from maybe a few teams are being really bad-mannered, maybe a few teams have never done a competitive tournament before, and because of that, they're just not able to get in the lobby easily, et cetera, and you have to be understanding and help them out. And so you're dealing with a whole slew of different things in terms of accommodating. So the part where we were able to get just through that smoothly was – everyone was very relieved, but it's also a testament to the work of the people involved there. So it was good.
Yeah, I mean, the results were also, I thought, pretty interesting, about as good as they could have been there. Because when you have that many teams coming in and – you know, that's a big bracket. It was randomized bracket as well. Like, the question is, are teams going to get knocked out that really should be there? And are teams going to get in that really shouldn't be getting in? And I think, by and large, we have a few surprises, a few teams that we didn't
expect. Take a look at the results here.
I don't think anyone expected FaZe to be number one.
Yeah.
I don't think that happened. Like, also, FNRG.
The tongue twister of the week. FNRGFE.
2017 just loves, it's a new trend. Words that aren't words.
Yeah. Hashtag FNRGFB.
That's how we communicate nowadays.
Did you guys talk to them? Is it supposed to mean something?
It's Fnatic, NRG,
Force Esports. It's all of that.
That's the only way I can remember it, actually. I just remember the NRG in the middle. And then
the problem is, for the casting point, the reason why we all said the entire thing repeatedly is... Here's the problem. Normally, when you have a really long team name, you would abbreviate it. But the abbreviation for FNRGFE was FNRG. That's not great for a broadcast. You really do have to say the last, like, FE. So you're kosher and saying the full team name and not just going. But someone just tunes around and is like, why are they saying FNRG repeatedly? This doesn't make any sense. So, that was an interesting thing to work around.
The roster is just, like, so full of, like, old FPS veterans, too, that, you know, as old people as we are, it's kind of comforting to see them as, like, oh, well, you actually can still play when you're 30-something. So the FNRG was amazing. I really did not expect FaZe to get
that. Oh, only anybody did.
And they have good talent, but they just came together, the new roster.
So for me, it's FaZe basically did the equivalent of going to Vegas and just rolling perfectly. Like, they rolled about as best they could here, because we've seen so many times that teams will go and rebuild half their team and have it just blow up in their face tremendously. So, of course, for those who don't know, FaZe literally replaced half of their roster, and they brought in Spree, Louis, and Joe Meisters. So in Spree, you're bringing on arguably one of the very strongest parts of LG Loyal. I'd say it was between him and Hidan for sort of the workhorses of that team. You're bringing in Joe Meister, who had incredible moments as a Lucio back in the Carbon series, and just one of the veteran Lucios in the game who brings a very good head on his shoulders. And then, of course, you're bringing Louis, who is sort of a wild card, but, I mean, you look at his recent resume. True, he wasn't giving effective results for Envy in Korea, but on the same note, it's still a person that people think is untapped out there, and he did play very well for FaZe. So the fact that they were able to replace three people with three people that have potential, or, you know, just who knew how they'd work together, and then have it work as well as it did, I mean, kudos to FaZe.
You know what's funny to me, though, is you and I talked this morning, and we talked to Monty about this as well, is that if you can get a team with a good support and a good tank, you're set. And that FaZe team has the old Oh No guys on it. It's Rockus and Fact and Fiction. So if you have those guys, everyone else can come in and do whatever their job is. DPS is, like, somewhat replaceable. And they've had, like, amazing supports and tanks on that team for a very long time, which is why FaZe has been as consistent and surprisingly consistent as they have been.
I have to bring something up with that. Speaking of tanks and supports, Immortals bringing on two new players.
Right.
They brought on a support and a tank, and it turns out they did pretty well this weekend, despite some miscommunication and, you know.
Korean imports are working out well for teams. Let's just put
surprise,
it
in. Surprise.
But here's the scary thing for Immortals.
Don't let Monty watch this.
Monty, he just said the truth there. Monty would approve of us saying the truth, which is that the Korean imports worked well. And here's the scary thing about Immortals, right? Is that Grieve and Fate weren't exactly fresh as daisies as they came back over. They literally they got there for the first day. They literally played after getting off the plane. And, okay, day two, Immortals won day two. They played a lot better. But that's still just like one night of sleep, not hardly any time to actually practice with the team. In fact, when we were looking at the camera and just making sure production was okay, we saw Immortals screwing up their old roster. So they had zero scrim time with these two new people.
Their old roster played the first couple of games in the open part of that. And then literally they like arrived at the place, like got set up, logged into their accounts, and boom, they're playing.
Yeah, so as far as that goes for Immortals, I mean, the fact that they did as well as they did with as little time to gel as possible, it scares you to think that what this current roster of six that they have now will be able to do once they, you know, actually get to know each other, tell each other their names, go, hi, how are you, and not just, like, log in to immediately play Overwatch.
Yeah, I mean, the DPS for Immortals, I think, Agilities especially, I felt like had an outstanding week.
What do you think, Chen, man? Well, is Agilities any good?
What's crazy is that people forget, though. You know, like, we've always known Agility has been great. Everybody talks about Grimm, obviously. He gets a lot of the love. And everybody just forgets about Agilities over time. And then he comes out, like, this week and says, you know, don't forget about me. I mean, I can be just as dominant. And that's what ended up happening. He took all the pressure off of Grimm and not to mention, he just made plays. He was just
In fairness to recent casting, I think going back even to OMMs, we've put a lot more focus on Agilities over Grimm. Like, there was a point many months ago that the focus was more on Grimm, but Agilities has just been the consistent workhorse for the team. Yeah. And it wasn't like I remember when we were just talking about prep and like storylines for Mortals coming in before they played a single game, we're just like, so Agilities is the main person to watch here as far as DPS goes. And yes, Grimm can back it up, but I mean, Agility has been the story for a very long time now.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to FaZe Clan, I mean, one of the great things about FaZe 2 is like getting a chance to see Shadowburn just, you know, just being freed up to shine. And that was the biggest thing with those additions. You know, Louis definitely held his own, and I don't know if it's just, you know, the level of competition was different, obviously, even here versus Korea, but he just looked like he was, you know, just a better fit for them altogether. And, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to see that. I love seeing Shadowburn just get to, you know, like not focused completely by the entire team and, you know, getting a chance to do what Shadow does. We need to see more of that. And I think it helps, too. It helps the just Overwatch as an esport.
Well, and Genji was a big part of this weekend in general. Almost every game, if Agility somebody was making hero plays, even, see, I need to look at all the rosters, Jaru, yeah, I was like, Faru, Jaru, yes, there you go. I mean, he was even standing out on, and so that's, my question is with Shadowburn, is if Genji keeps being as prominent as he is, you know, I think that's going to help them, but what is he going to do off of that Genji, and how are teams going to adjust to that, because he has started to show other heroes, but I mean, we need to see something more than just Genji out of him.
His tracing's middling. I think he can play a Pharah, but that team doesn't run a Pharah very often. Shadowburn is an old Team Fortress soldier, so he can run a Pharah. He can do it well enough, but his Genji is that much.
We don't want to see him play anything.
Overwatch right now rewards one tricking. It very heavily rewards one tricking. And at one hand, I think that sort of, it's interesting, right? Because on one hand, you can look at it and go, well, versatility is a good thing. But on the same note, versatility, if you're playing a whole bunch of heroes at an 8, and you have someone else on the other team that's playing a very meta-relevant hero at a 10, usually, in recent times, we've seen that the people that can play those heroes at a 10 level are crushing teams that would go, oh, they're so great, they're so versatile. Well, if you're going, say, against Soon, and his Tracer is destroying your Tracer, it's hard to feel great that maybe your Tracer can play a few other heroes better than Soon.
So my question to that then would be, why were we so surprised that FaZe was going to be in first?
Well, because we had no data on their roster, right?
We
had no data on their swap, and FaZe played terribly with their old roster.
Yeah, we actually talked about this, you know, the pickup last week, but we had never seen them play. So this is the first time we've gotten a chance to see it. Go ahead, Gil. You have another.
That's what we were questioning, because like Shadowburn, even when they were not performing very well, if they were winning, is because he was just going off on Genji. He was like making up for everything else. And now that he's got some more support behind him, it really frees him up and the rest of the team.
The focus needs to be shifted in Overwatch as far as the spectator point of view of DPS are sexy, right? They're beautiful to watch. It's amazing when we watch DPS. But if you even look back like the old Envy, right? We talked about the Core 4 for so long. You look like Chips and Coco. Like that, it's a support and a tank. Look at the support in the tank and how they can carry the team. And those Oh No guys that are on FaZe, I mean, Rockus or Fact and Fiction, are so good and so overlooked. Like that's how FaZe got number one. They carry that team.
Support and tanks overlooked? Are you really? Happens all the time, right? Zeefy.
Yeah.
Well, just a more testament to that fact is that Immortals, just by swapping out Nomi and swapping out Aethon and going to the two new players in those roles, what did we see from Immortals? We saw aggression that they have never done before, at the very least, never been successful at. It's hard to say. Maybe they have tried to go as aggressive as they had before with Nomi and Aethon. It's just they were so bad at aggression that you just sort of go, oh, well, Immortals has just died. So it was with their new additions that they're actually able to make it work. And I remember it's like a Legion Control Center where we're looking at them going, they're just actually not backing up. There is no chill in the Immortals team. They are directly in them right now.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other teams. What are the big surprises for you guys?
I think the roster of FNRG, FE really surprised me. I know those guys, they've all played different. I did not expect them to be where they are. So I think that they're a dangerous team, right? Because I think they just started playing together for like the last week or so. Those are FPS vets. I was a little surprised that Liquid played as poorly as they did, but that's just me, right? That's just
okay.
Me.
They still eked in, though.
Wow. Liquid did the standard Liquid thing of, we're not going to play up to our potential, but we're not going to get knocked out. It's just,
just Liquid good special enough.
For just toying. It's not Liquid toys with your heart. I would say Toronto Esports for me, coming out of basically nowhere. And I mean, Jaru in particular, this is a guy where, never forget here that OW Contenders, yes, we are looking at the teams, but it is a player-focused tournament in a sense, where we want to see what players are going to really lead the charge to future events. And I got to say, Jaru absolutely built his resume and then some with his play for Toronto Esports. So that for me was one of the just surprises in a really good way. It was really fun watching him play.
I'd say Selfless too. Selfless performed a little bit worse than I expected. Like I think a lot of people expected them to finish top four, and you know, they still end up getting top eight.
A lot of people did expect that. Mm-hmm. Some people, I don't know. I guess, they've obviously been doing really well lately. I think no one expected them to not make it, for sure.
Yeah.
There's an amazing amount of variance in the top end of North American Overwatch. I mean, I use the term, I don't love using it, but they're emotional teams. If they lose a game, they can lose a set, and they can lose, like, the next set beyond that. And I know Selfless, several of the Yikes, all of these teams are tilty. They're tilty teams, the tilty players.
Here's the thing about Selfless is that I don't think Selfless has gotten worse relative than when they were effectively always getting second and say things like the monthly melee. What I do think is that there's two things in Selfless. One is that other teams are catching up. Selfless was ahead of the game in two ways. One is that their mechanical skill and players like Defran for a time there was a bigger gap than there probably should have been, A. And then B is that they were really aggressive at a time where teams in Overwatch, particularly in the West, were more passive than they should have been. So Selfless was bringing sort of this brand of Smash Mouth Overwatch and sort of the first on that forefront. And it was surprising people. Well, it's not surprising anyone anymore. Everyone knows what Selfless means when you have a team just chilling in your spot. These things don't surprise anyone anymore. And Selfless also, it feels like they haven't really evolved from the standpoint of, let's just go in and DM people. They are not playing around alt economy anywhere near as well as they should. And their initiations are very oftentimes just... no. Yeah, it is kind. And their initiations in general just aren't really up to par with what we're seeing from more organized teams that are playing around their tanks. So, yes, Defran is a great player. Yes, there's a lot of space made for Sinatra, but Selfless at this point needs to take the next step and incorporate some real strategy and tactics to their otherwise unbridled aggression.
Would you agree that they're predictable at this point?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that I liken them to LG Evil, the former Hammer Squad, because when it was four tanks, that was like their dig. You know, they were doing well because of that. Mm-hmm. And they're an example of a team who, you know, as soon as the meta shifted, as soon as what their one trick as a team was kind of got exposed and weakened, they had to go. They went through this period, and they're still potentially going through this period where they're trying to adapt. And they've actually done a fairly good job. I mean, they got second seed here. Of adjusting, and that is the type of mentality that is going to push you into the long term of any esports venture, but especially since Overwatch is now really starting to ramp up with this kind of new era, that is going to be the big question coming into this event. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the teams that didn't get in, so just kind of taking a different approach here. And, you know, one of the fan favorites was definitely Kelvin and the Chipmunks, which was Seagull's stream team with Calvin and crew, Ajax, and all those guys. And, you know, there was a lot of viewers, you know, obviously watching those streams and a lot of threads talking about it. I watched it, too. It was a lot of fun watching them, just getting a chance to hear the team comps and things like that. They missed it by one, right? Because they finished I think they finished 16th, but since C9 gets in, they got knocked out.
A lot of people don't like Cloud9 now because of what happened. That's right.
Yeah. But overall, I mean, what do you guys think of their run? I mean, I was pretty surprised that they were able to make it as far as they did.
I mean, I feel like they fell about where you would expect, because I wouldn't expect a team throwing the garret like that to really be able to beat really organized teams that have been on very serious scrim schedules. Mm-hmm. But I also wouldn't expect them to lose to a put-together team of people that we haven't seen before. So, I mean, if you think about where they should stand versus other organized teams, it's about what I sort of expected coming in.
They're about the 17th best team in North America. Yeah. it makes a little bit of sense.
Well, when you say it like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's legitimately what the number is. I think it's good. I really appreciate that people understand the comms, and they liked watching that, and I hope that carries over, and that the people who their first day on our competitive Overwatch stay on our competitive Overwatch, and we can grow that. We've been looking for the crossover for a while, and I think it was a wonderful thing that Seagull did, that now maybe we can have some of that crossover.
Yeah, no, just one thing about their run in general is day one, they actually beat a few teams that we didn't necessarily expect them to. But day two, on the day that they got into that round of eight, I think they had the easiest run of any of the teams that got into the round of eight. Nothing against them, but obviously once they did start getting up against those more organized teams, my big question is, would they have even wanted to play? You know, like, I thought it was this cool, like, haha, let's go stream for a weekend. And, well, maybe they would have just then streamed for 5 weekends, you know, but I don't know.
I think if they had gotten in, I think they would have been absolutely down to play it, because what you have there is that it's very difficult to maintain a stream schedule while also maintaining a scrim schedule. So if you can combine the streams there, recognizing that you're probably not going to match the results of a team that's in the hyperbolic time chamber and not streaming, but could still have a good result. I mean, that's fun, and I think they would have liked to have had that result, and they came really close.
If any of those players want to, like, get on a roster, I'm sure they could. There's a lot of talent on that team.
I mean,
they have individual talent. Yeah.
Most of them have been on rosters, so it's not an issue of whether they're pro player.
Tony Siegel's been on a roster.
I mean, everyone, all six of those guys. What was cool too is that in between matches they were doing analysis. You know, like Flame was on there, and Pure was doing some analysis.
Yeah.
So over, you know, just a different experience. It was cool to have, like, y'all's experience, which, you know, was the high production, and then we have this kind of experience on the side. It would have been nice if it was combined in some way, so we could have, like, an aggregate number, you know, and have it really dent into the Twitch viewer rankings and stuff like that. But, you know,
an idea I have had that we probably, I mean, it's not nowhere near implementation probably, but I agree with that. I mean, we've even thought about doing, like, two streams, you know, like a main stream that's just like that, and then maybe invite some more community members, other players, to just kind of, like, more chat about the game as they're watching it, because it's going to be different levels of analysis and entertainment value. And that's like a long-term goal for me always, because I enjoy watching that as much as I like being, you know, on the desk. And obviously a lot of other people like it too.
I think that idea is really good. It's one of those things that will require Overwatch to eventually have this. You know, I can go watch any, you know, pro game that's going on right now, kind of like Dota and some of the other games. So I think once that's there, then, yeah, that kind of stream is definitely possible.
Those are ideas that are being kicked around by people who are way more important than us.
Yeah, what? Way higher in the pay grade, right? All right, let's talk about the tournament MVP for this weekend, which ended up being TLMO, which ended up making some huge highlights, and it's obviously going to, you know, lead to our discussion with NRG. But how about that guy, guys? How about the two clips with this guy ended up getting thousands and maybe even 10,000?
Those were six shares.
So let's set this up here from our perspective. We're watching that. We had just settled down in the back area, and we were looking for Sweet's watch. And I remember I looked. It's like, oh, hey, this guy's streaming. So we were watching him before the shatter happens. And, right. And like, it was me, Monty, Hex, Noah, and Gil. We're just sitting there. And then, like, we're all, for whatever reason, we weren't looking at the moment of the shatter. And the audible sounds from all of us, we see their shows like, oh. And then it just kept rolling. Like, we were monitoring things like Pro Talk. Pro Talk was losing its mind. Reddit was losing its mind. It was basically a half hour of everyone just repeatedly looking at that Earth Shatter and looking at the reactions to that Earth Shatter. So easily one of the most entertaining Earth Shatters Overwatch has seen probably ever.
Or even traps, you know, traps and detonations too. And what people are wondering, like, what are you guys talking about? Well, NRG ended up playing, I forget what the name of the team was, but it was basically a gold
Genji
platinum.
Genji Sox or something.
It
was a team full of gold and platinum players. And one in particular, TLMO, there was a clips that ended up becoming, you know, pretty viral. But he ended up on Nepal.
Nutty's being used too much now, by the way. Like, I am not ever using that phrase on a account, at least not anytime soon.
I mean, it almost looked like that shatter shouldn't have been locked. But anyways, what ended up happening is he ended up shattering like almost the entire NRG team, and then they ended up wiping the team at that point. Except for one. I think one player ended up getting away there. And apparently there was like a bet going on too. Like, if they could shatter the entire team and wipe the team, they would get $500 or something like that. So there was like these other things going on at the same time. Just obviously nobody thought they would end up doing that. But because that ended up happening, obviously it ended up becoming crazy. And then there was another play with him where he ended up throwing out a trap right in front of the point door, and they and having, you know, obviously the mine there too. And then he ended up trapping and blowing them up, and then obviously a lot of laughing going on there. So pretty crazy things, obviously, at the expense of NRG there. And on top of that, NRG didn't qualify. So, man, when it rains, it pours on NRG, man. And at this point, it's like, what do you say?
Five different people on that roster.
I know.
Like, who's even NRG at this point? Like,
yeah.
And then I think there's one person on the NRG roster who's been on the NRG roster beforehand. Like, I don't know. It's interesting to me that people talk about NRG, and I'm like, but it's not. They're totally different guys now. It's not the same team that NRG was.
It's still the brand. I mean, whatever, right? It's still the brand, the team. You know, it's the same company.
Is it still Seagull's team?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know. That's probably debatable or not. But the big thing is that, you know, I guess folks didn't have the expectations that they would make it in. I don't know. You guys obviously clearly didn't have any expectations.
Well, no, I mean, honestly, when I was looking at day two, when it saw them against Envision and knowing how well Envision's been playing, people weren't really expecting NRG to win. And I think that's just a testament to how poorly NRG has played since their return. I mean, start with the monthly melee they came back in, where they had a horrific group stage. It did not go well for them. And just everything since then, they haven't given anyone even a sliver of hope to look at here. It's like, okay, there's a big run that they're doing now, and all right, we can feel good about this. This is a building point. It's just been crushed hope after crushed hope. And I don't really know where you go forward here. It feels like there's a lot more to fix than just one particular spot. I don't know. It's NRG has been very disappointing.
They've changed too many players for me to have a great deal of faith in them. It reminds me of like old Complexity, where every couple weeks they're changing new players, they're changing new tanks, they're changing new supports. There's no one on that NRG roster that's like really from the Not Enigma roster, which was like the first NRG roster. So it's very difficult to have faith in them when they barely play and then they have middling results.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is they're different than other teams like Team Liquid, who have had disappointing results for their fans here and there. In that Liquid, they always make it in. You know, they're just always there, and they go against a big team, and you're like, they're probably not going to win, but, you know, who knows? They actually could win this one match against this good team.
Well, the thing about Liquid is that it's rare, even, like, Liquid has the superpower of making most of their games close, even if they lose them. It's not a great superpower, but most of the time, you watch Liquid. You never look at a Liquid game and go, wow, they just got completely crushed. Yeah. And Liquid does have tournaments and maps where they do very well, and they do get top four. The problem with NRG over the last few months is that NRG has just gotten demolished in every tournament they've been in. There's nothing you can hang your hat on and be like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Like, I feel good about this. Like, it's just pain and suffering as far as the eye can see.
I'd be remiss if for Flames Discord if I didn't mention how good of a pickup Shatter was for that Liquid team.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing with NRG for me at this point is that it's going to take like 10 decent results or good results for them to even get out of the hole that they're in at this point. You know, they're kind of the joke right now, and I almost feel like they need to reset. They almost need to start over. Even those players. I mean, I think the players need to just like reset, go to a different team,
add a new coach. We'll see if that comes.
I guess
it bears fruit.
It's basically every player that has left NRG has had more success off NRG.
Yeah.
It's a systemic problem. It's not the players or there's something at the root that we can't see. And I, having no real insight into that, there are some deep things that have to change.
And NRG, you know, they're a team that takes care of their players. I mean, there's no secret there.
Oh, yeah.
They have to pay their questions. No. They pay their players very, very well.
They're well taken care of.
Yeah.
They eat well. Like,
they eat well.
They sleep well.
Steak dinners every night. Yeah. Yes. Totally. Hopefully we'll see some changes soon or something change at least, and, you know, have them at least get out of the doghouse, because it seems like they're eternally there. In terms of other events going on right now, so TakeOver 2 happened this last, actually at the same time as you guys, which is like, come on, man, can we schedule some of these big events to be on different weekends?
It's why we're all in the same house right now. We came here today to watch VODs. Having the show happen was just incidental, actually. We wanted to do prep for the TakeOver VODs.
Yeah, I mean, because we wouldn't hang out normally, I think is what he's trying to say.
No, I dislike both of these guys immensely.
And now you're just sandwiched between us, which is all sorts of
awesome. Sandwich.
Are we just gonna start talking
the heck sandwich?
Face?
Yes, great.
You can't escape. There's no actually easy way of getting out.
Yeah. So yeah, TakeOver 2 happened over at Take's place. So, you know, over in Germany, and, you know, I wasn't able to catch everything. It was just too much Overwatch to watch this weekend. So, what I did catch of it, it was a lot of fun. It was what we always see from Take. Production was great. Even I think the spectating was actually extremely good too.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, what we ended up seeing was, no surprise, Rogue ended up winning. I was thinking that E-United would be, you know, would give them a real threat. And they ended up finishing second too, so it wasn't like it was, you know, they were disappointing or whatnot. But overall, Rogue ended up beating United, I think, at least twice. Did they play three times, or did they only play?
You wanted to echo some of Monty's sentiments.
Yes, I was going to say. So effectively, Monty was the first to mention this as far as Rogue taking a TakeOver, and he is right. Is that basically Rogue got blasted in Korea? They did not cover themselves in glory in Korea. And if you're giving the West a power level, effectively, and you're looking at that here, it would have been a better omen for Western Overwatch if Rogue got blasted by E-United, Misfits, or one of the other EU teams there, because it was more of an unknown quantity. The fact that Rogue was able to run what they have run forever and had troubles with in Korea and use that to bulldoze the competition TakeOver, that's not great.
They changed nothing and were never punished for it.
Exactly.
Even if Rogue underperformed in Korea, which is a theory that's going around, they would have had to really overperform if the regions are that close to each other. My big thing, talking about regionality, though, because actually looking at the list, because not having seen all the VODs, like this actual, the placements would have been pretty close to how I might have guessed. But the fact that Cloud9 made it so high in there due to their recent results in Korea and North America, like they have not been one of the top two or three teams necessarily in North America. Maybe one of the, definitely one of the top brands, but I'm curious to see now how they perform in the NA side of things. Is that little litmus test for where NA fits into this whole equation? It's going to be very important.
There's two teams I want to look for next weekend. It's Movistar Riders, who just absolutely dumpstered like some of the teams that they played against. They dumpstered Hammers. It was like 4-0 every time they played. And also, like, I want to see what NIP actually does. Yeah. NIP, the big question about them is when the meta changes, can they change with it?
No,
we'll see.
No,
historically, the answer
pretty much what the answer has been. Yeah.
That's the most stubborn team. So I would love it. I mean, I really personally love a lot of the guys at NIP. I mean, I've hung out with them a bunch at this point, but they are a stubborn team. I mean, if for people who don't know, they go back to when they were known as SG1, and they actually were not a top team really when they were playing more meta stuff. And then they sort of carved out their identity in heavy tank play right about the time that the guy picked up by NIP, and it worked out really well for them.
ZP doesn't want to tell you that he 1v1'd and beat most of them in London.
I was going for the all-kill on NIP and one-on-ones until someone spilled beer on the router.
And I think it was Uber. Let's blame Mitch.
No, Mitch was behind us laughing his ass off as that was happening. Mitch was not the culprit that speared beer on the router. Maybe it was a defeated NIP guy. I don't know.
Moral of the story, though, is I really am excited to see more of the United as well, just because of how consistent they've been. And I mean, also having not really known the scene too much, but seeing them back to as far as Pitt.
Yeah.
I guess I just really want to find some of these big, talented teams in EU because, well, I mean, we're going to be watching a lot more of them here soon. Yeah. My big question is, because with NA, I knew pretty well like what those 16 teams are going to look like with a little bit of variance, and I don't have any idea what like the bottom eight is
going to
look like.
Nine through 16 is going to be very difficult for us. We have phone calls set up with EU experts after the show to try to.
Oh really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Figured Jason and Uber might be able to give the lowdown on that. So one team that I thought would do better, and I even said it last week, I thought they would do better, is I thought Misfits would do better. And Misfits ended up disappointing. You know, they ended up finishing in bottom of Group B. And the first day was just, I don't know, they just played really poorly on the first day. And they redeemed themselves with, you know, one win on the second day. But by that time, they were already out. So it wasn't like it was meaningful or anything like that. What's going on with Misfits? You know, we even saw a little bit of Twitter drama too with Reinforce and Alakis, and it alluded to, you know, like Reinforce saying that we would have done better maybe if we had a coach, and then Alakis obviously defending, you know, just Misfits management because, you know, he's obviously very close friends with those guys and alluded to Misfits being a very player run team, you know, and that's an issue right now.
Because I don't have complete information, I'm going to stay away from too much speculation on what is going on internally there. I will say objectively from the outside in, it's pretty clear that Misfits is not living up to the sum of its parts. Like right now, they are less than the sum of their parts. There's a lot of talent on that team, and they are objectively underperforming right now. Whatever demons they have to slay internally to fix that, who knows?
In the same vein that I don't know the internal workings or whatever, I feel it would be difficult to come in as a coach or a manager because you're coming into like the 96 Chicago Bulls, right? It's like
there's a little bit of an exaggeration there.
Well, Tvik is an amazing player. I don't know how he takes coaching or whatever. I think he's a good guy. Then he, you know, Reinforce as well. I don't know how well they would take coaching. They're a team of people who are very talented at the game that I think coming in to coach that team, you have to have a high level of respect already at the scene so that they would even listen to you.
Yeah, no, it really, because once again, not having much insider information or exposure to that, it really is a reflection of something that's happening in the scene in general. And that has happened in other esports scenes and is still happening in just about every esports scene is this translation from really good at a video game to a team that is systemically growing towards perfection in a video game. So, you know, early on in any scene, you basically just have players that are really good and they are going to, you know, rise to the top. And they're probably getting more stardom than they ever thought that they would, you know, in their basements and stuff. And then suddenly they're pushed to the forefront and they think they are hot shit. Okay. And having worked with over the last 5 years, a lot of pro video gamers, they think they's hot shit. You think you're hot shit?
No.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah, no. That's good. That's good.
That's good.
and but you do have to kind of have that humility to have someone that probably isn't as high of rank of you as you in a game to come in and to tell you what you need to do as a player and how you need to fit into a team when all you've ever been told by your fans, by the community is you're awesome. I love you.
You're amazing.
Yeah. It is a systemic issue with the entire scene that we're seeing grow. And even Immortals having bringing on some new coaching, we're seeing more teams and organizations latch onto that.
So I'll speak in general here, not specific to Misfits or anything like that, but just Western scene in general is that among many Western players, not all, but there is the sort of presiding sentiment of, well, we don't really need a coach because we know more about the game than this guy is going to be bringing in. Like, what is he actually doing? And
bottom quarter.
Exactly. It's led to the position that a lot of your coaches and the Western team right now, if you actually go into the back, listen to their comms, etc., they're not acting as coaches. They're acting as, all right, I'm recording VODs in the back, and here are a few suggestions. That is objectively not what a coach should be. Your coach should be a lot more hands-on, directing things, and probably most importantly, have power over the players. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think you have that many empowered coaches in the scene right now that can go, hey, what you did in this game was completely off-plan and terrible. You should activate Dragon Blade and spawn and dance around for 18 seconds, throw yourself on the map. Therefore, the next tournament, you're actually benched. We're going to be going with this because
that's silly. No one would ever activate Dragon Blade and spawn.
No, that's never happened in Overwatch. Never happened. Never
happened. Enough said. All right. Well, yeah, I think that wraps up TakeOver 2. I mean, again, another successful event for a Take, and you know, Dennis and all those guys do an excellent job. So TakeOver 3, I'm sure, is going to be coming up. And
fly me out. By the way, just unabashedly, fly me out to TakeOver 3, please. I would love to go there.
I just have one thing to say. No.
If you're going to do this, Hex, leverage what you're good at. They had a lot of product placement there.
Not good at anything.
That's true.
Remember your
roots. That's true. You can plug all the sponsors, man.
Yeah. Need for seats. Seats.
Okay, you're fired. You're totally fired.
I have two more things before you leave. TakeOver is, first of all, they were getting pretty comfortable on that couch. Arguably, dude, too.
Jason's legs were distracting me the entire time. I'm just like,
and bring shorts if you get to go there.
Bring shorts.
I will say that from the contenders at Control Center, the very first thing we did was mock Jason for wearing shorts. And then it got worse because Brent was wearing shorts on day two. So I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm never going to wear shorts on the broadcast. People do not need to see my legs. I value my viewers having eyesight.
Yeah, we don't want to see that.
So. Yeah. Oh, Brent and Sideshow were good too, I have to say. Yeah. They did a good
amazing.
Job.
Yeah.
Great job.
I really liked the casting. Yeah, I like all those casters.
Well, the casting was very well received, and it should have been. They were amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, before we move on to some news segments, I do want to remind everybody that the overview is available on iTunes as well as Google Play, Google Podcast, and SoundCloud. So if you want to listen to us on the way to work or when you're working out or whatever you're doing on with your iPad or your iPhones, go ahead and look us up, the overview, or you can look up Overwatch and you can find us. One thing that does help us, if you do want to help the show out, is to leave a nice 5-star review if you like it. So a few people have done that in the past. Whoop.
I have done that.
You've done it?
It's a good enough show that I
get. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Gil. I even remember giving you a shout out, too. So. But yeah, check that out, guys. And again, it helps us out like a great deal. And it only takes like a minute or two to do it. Okay, news. We've got a couple things. We actually covered a couple of those things, so I kind of took them off of here. But one big thing is Internet Hulk, which he was on here, you know, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, talking about coaching Rogue. Well, he's moved on to a different team now. He's going to be coaching Team Liquid now, which is what's that laugh all about?
The meme is becoming true. There's a meme picture of like Hulk with all the different esports logos on his face, because it's like technically for like 5 seconds he was affiliated with Laser Kittens.
Yeah,
and Rogue.
That's true.
And
that's three
teams. At this point, I'm not convinced that Dennis isn't just like actually secretly just assembling all the information for all teams so he could be a secret shadowy Overwatch information broker.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, those shadowy sports brokers make a ton of money, you know, from what I've heard and seen. But this seems like a better fit for Hulk. I know one of the things with Rogue that he mentioned, or you know, just in talking with him, is that, you know, the language barrier actually was a huge issue for them. and or at least for him and with the team. So I think he wasn't quite. I don't think he got a chance to do exactly what he was wanting to do, or maybe the work with them wasn't as efficient as it could have been. And, you know, with Team Liquid, obviously there's not going to be that kind of, you know, that kind of hurdle with him. And like we were talking before, Team Liquid seems to have the potential to be, to have some break, some huge wins, or maybe even some huge performances. And we see it from time to time, but it's just never consistent. I think adding him could help with that quite a bit.
I'm going to wait and see idea with this. I think that Hulk is an intelligent man. He understands Overwatch. He's been playing since like close beta 1. I thought they were getting a lot better under their previous coach, and then they fired him and hired Aaron Hawk. So I'm going to wait and see. But Liquid was struggling for a while. They hired a new coach. They got better and better for like about 2 months, and now they just fired that coach. We'll wait and see. I don't know. I mean, it's Liquid, so my heart's broken already.
Yeah, and I don't think this is happening, what I'm about to say. Because having listened to Internet Hulk and, you know, obviously seeing some of his results, but hearing his vision that he really does have lofty goals when it comes to coaching, mm-hmm. I don't think this is happening. But it brings up the question of, like, what organizations are looking for in a coach? Because right now, you know, you're seeing organizations balance branding with actual quality coaching, with finding a coach that your team's going to respect. There's all these factors. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he interacts with them, because I think that he brings all of those aspects.
He is one of the few people that players would listen to, though. Because it's Internet Hulk. He's had results. He's had victories. So I think that's a good aspect for him.
I want to be bullish on Dennis joining Team Liquid here, because aside from that, Dennis is a great guy. It's also the part where when you look back to the last time he was on here, he's very driven. He wants mm-hmm. to be in Overwatch League, period. So to have your coach have a high level of drive is pretty important if you want to take the grand prize. He is also a veteran leader. No one's going to look at him and go, gee, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Right. Well, Hulk was able to put together one of the longest, most successful teams in Overwatch in the core of Envy. So for Hulk, we'll see how it works out. It will, in making Team Liquid the best they can be, I have all the high hopes in the world. But we'll have to see. I mean, even if you have a great coach and a great team, as you see from other traditional sports, it's not always the best fit. So I would say I hope Team Liquid does well. We'll see where they go for it. Yeah. But I have a lot of respect for the Liquid core now, and I have a lot of respect for Internet Hulk.
Yep.
I was surprised to see him hired, because I was surprised that they fired their former coach, to be honest. I thought they had gone up and they'd achieved a better level than they had before in the last 2 months. So it's interesting. We'll see how it goes. But I respect Dennis a lot.
Okay, next bit of news we have is something ZP you wanted to talk about, which was Thorn recently made a video, late last week, that was focused on TSM, a little bit of backstory just with some of the player transactions that have happened in the past. And ZP, yeah, like, why don't you lead us into this?
So basically, Thorn's video goes into the TSM saga. So this is something that a lot of people in the scene knew what was going on behind the scenes, but it wasn't really public, which was that TSM being this revolving door where they signed three people and then they just sort of disappeared for a while. You had a lot of really good players tied up by TSM, but in the shadows where they weren't participating in tournaments. They really just had this really convoluted player situation. And it's a thing where it's very complicated, but if you go to Thorin's video, it goes in depth as to what happened. And it's sort of a good insight as to sort of the good and bad in forms of esports here. And more than anything else, too, is that there are good players on TSM that are sort of out of the scene for ages. This is an explanation as to where they went and why they weren't in tournaments for 4 or 5 months. Because, of course, the sort of light version is that you had a lot of the Kangarna players on TSM and that team was split. And it was this gigantic saga. So I'm not going to repeat the entire video, but I do.
You're not going to do the 30-minute video for us?
No. I mean, I could just go full auctioneer as quick as possible, but it is an interesting thing to check out.
I watch it today. Like, I was watching it. I'm like, I just don't care anymore. Like, even prior to that, it's very obvious that TSM, whoever's running the TSM Overwatch team, has no idea about Overwatch, because they decided to see him earlier, that they let him go. They decided to see him, they let him go. So I can't bring myself to care anymore about the TSM Overwatch division until whoever's involved becomes more involved, because they're not right now.
Yeah. I actually started watching it while I was preparing for Contenders, and then some fire happened, a metaphorical fire that I had put out, so I stopped the video, so I wasn't able to actually finish it. But something that I know from, you know, just like Thorin, a value that he has is, and I don't know if this directly applies to this situation, but is that orgs and everyone involved in esports has to make sure that you have high standards and that you're upholding yourself and others to high standards. Because there are still a lot of remnants, and I'm not saying that this is TSM because they've been a very prolific organization, but something that Thorin always wants to bring to the forefront is if an organization or a person is putting other people by the wayside, especially because of the low standards or, you know, any kind of issues like that. And I think it's something that it's just good to be mindful of no matter what.
They've already done themselves poorly by dipping their toes into the Overwatch scene and not really knowing it. So right now, if TSM were to sign a team tomorrow, it would be somewhat of a... People would laugh at it. People would make jokes of it. People would meme about it. Pro Talk would go nuts, is what I'm saying. Because TSM's already made questionable decisions.
I think if there's a lesson involved in all this too, is that if you're a big name org getting the Overwatch, which TSM certainly was, is that it's important that you seek out proper consultation and find the expertise needed to help you build this team. Because I think there's a good parallel here where TSM was stuck trying to build half a team for ages, and they really weren't able to do it well. Then meanwhile, you look at an organization like FaZe that literally cuts half their team, replaces half their team in the period of a week, and then does really well. So there's something to be said for just, if you're going into a new game, make sure you get someone endemic to the game that, or if not running it, at least in a strong advisory capacity to help you build. Because more than anything else in the TSM situation, you have a lot of people that were fans of the org from other games and wanted to be fans of it. And it's been a disappointment with how they've produced so far.
Because no matter what, at the end of this, like, trust has been broken in different people and organizations. And that's really important in a new esport to have. I mean, we were just talking about coaches, like having trust in your coach. And there's already a lack of enough trust that you need to be able to have that high standard of it.
Right. It just takes one buyout by TSM to actually end up getting a great team that people love, and they'll recover from it. But TSM is one of the biggest esport brands, or at least endemic esport brands. They're not going anywhere. They'll be in Overwatch. There's no question.
Crip is totally going to be my main tank. Crip and Trump team.
Crip and Trump team.
I go for Crip for my counterbalance.
Trump's on Tempo's dorm now. What are you talking about?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, he is. He is somewhat branded with me. But no, I go for Crip for my counterbalance tank, where you have XQC, who is probably the most emotional tank in Overwatch. Yeah. Well, after watching a few hours of XQC, now I just got to chill out a bit with the Crip.
Crip doesn't have feelings, that's true.
Yeah. All right, well, guys, let's do some Q&A. We again, we don't have any emails this week, so if you've got any questions, and if you guys can bring up chat too, Gil, if you can, go ahead and type out any questions you got. We'll answer, I don't know, maybe three or four of them. Got some time this week. We cruised through those topics this week. Good stuff, man. We've been talking about like making these episodes shorter, and like we've never been able to do it, but this week is mission accomplished. It must be Ben bringing us, slowing us down.
I would say there's definitely a unique benefit to just having three people in the same room. I mean, yeah. Look, we've had to work on a desk with each other now for about a month and a half, soon to be like 2 months and a half by the time it's all said and done. So, I mean, at the very least, there is some chemistry and getting through stuff pretty quickly.
So people are asking about Apex. So we're going to hold off on Apex. Because Apex is like literally every single week, and it always happens right before the show, I figured we would kind of clump things. We'd maybe do it every other week, and at least until the playoffs. So, the playoffs got announced today. Oh, no wonder everybody's talking about it. Okay, we'll definitely... Let me see if I can bring it up. If
what got announced today?
Is the Apex playoffs get announced today? No way, right? They're not done, are they? Oh, actually, they might be. Quarterfinals. Yeah, they are. Quarterfinals, yeah, because they played their third games like this past week. Okay, so, all right, if we're going to talk about quarterfinals, this is how it's laying out. So we've got Group A, which is Envious versus X6, and then Africa Blue versus MetaAthena. Wow, that's going to be good stuff right there. Group B is LW Blue versus Convox, and then Lunatic Hive versus Kung Do Panthera.
Some Kitty Pete.
Crazy. Right. Really crazy first round. Yeah.
Yeah, that last one particularly. Right.
Yes. Looking forward to that one. Lunatic Hive versus Kung Do Panthera, I think, could be, man, I mean, I just could be the best match of the entire playoffs.
I will call the upside of KDP just because if I'm wrong, no one will care. And if I'm right, I look like a
genius. Right. Safe bet there.
Yeah.
Remember, what that means is if Hex is wrong, you need to just Twitch clip this, go to Reddit. Just don't let this man succeed with his devious plan.
Yeah.
Always take chances on your predictions.
So NVS versus X6, I think, is a little interesting, too. And X6 is a lot of people's dark horse. So, you know, NVS, I think, gets to prove if they are one of the contenders here, which I believe they are. So if they can take care of X6 pretty easily, then, you know, it's going to be pretty hard not to choose NVS in the finals here. Africa Blue versus MetaAthena, that's a good one. I feel like MetaAthena's, I don't know, I feel like they're on the way down a bit, where Africa Blue's on the way up. And so they're in different directions. We'll see how that ends up turning out.
Okay, man, on the previous note, are you saying that Envious could have an effect on the tournament?
I've been trying my best not to do. You know how many weeks I've tried not to pull that joke out? And
well, I've effectively blown things up.
Oh, boy. Here we go. That's going to be starting this next week, I believe. Can't wait to see that. And, of course, we'll be definitely covering Apex in detail next week. Let's see. Any other...
Actually, I'd like to know what Fishsticks has to say about that.
Fishsticks, what do you think, buddy? Today. Where's Ben?
He's, you're going to be hearing hula music in a second here.
Yeah. That's the nice part. He's actually fighting a shark.
Fighting a shark, yeah. Overwatch League confirmed through V3. What? That's not right, right?
What?
Somebody's probably putting not that in the chat. There's no way. There's no way that's happening.
Which chat?
By the way, the new 3v3 is amazing. Oh, Chan Manny Chat. Well done, devs. The new 3v3 game mode is awesome.
I agree. We were talking about last
week. Amazingly good, yeah.
Do I need to have a special...
Just go to my channel, Chan Manny, twitch.tv.
The Twitch chat. I feel silly.
Left guy doesn't know about Twitch chat.
No, not the Discord chat.
Somebody closer to the keyboard.
Yeah. No, the 3v3, I've been having a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun playing that.
Yeah, it's really good. Mm-hmm. Even Flame likes a 3v3.
Oh, man.
That's how you know.
He tolerates 3v3.
That's the metric.
Strong word next.
Okay, well, maybe one or two more questions, guys. Ask away, and then we'll call it a day.
Well, in the interim, I don't even know this about you. What is your main?
What's my main? Oh, we don't know. We don't know much about me. Well, I'm a May main. No, I play.
I'd be respect, man. I give you respect if you're a May main.
No, I explosive. Yeah, I wish I was. This was my first exposure to Twitch chat. No, I love Twitch chat. There's a lot of memes. No, anyway, I Pharah would probably be my main. I ended up playing a lot of Roadhog just because. I feel like I can solo carry from that role in my...
Not anymore, yeah, you
not
can.
Not that I've been playing a lot of Tracer, but Pharah Tracer, probably. Yeah. McCree. Actually, because I played okay at Counter-Strike, and I just would run around with a Deagle all day. So McCree, when I play a couple days as him, right. I'll get up to like a good level where I can play him, but...
ZP hates Junkrat so much. Like,
it's pretty
visceral Junkrat. We were sitting in our Airbnb in Denver, and I'm just messing around with like quick play or whatever. And I'm like, I was gonna play a little Junkrat because it's like King's Row first defense, and just playing a little Junkrat. And he like had to walk out of the room, could not watch me play even quick play Junkrat.
So Hex is covering for me a little bit here. It's true, I had to walk out of the room, but I returned with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And I had the Purge Evil from his PC.
Yeah, it was that's where my case got broken. It wasn't from
it wasn't UPS at all.
Well, Junkrat, man, that you must be happy about where the meta is here. Junkrat.
Oh, it's so fun. It's
I have
fun.
No
it's
idea fun where fun. He's gonna be. No idea.
No, Junkrat doesn't exist. Exactly. Yeah, it's just nothing.
As God intended it.
Like not even in like
jeez, man, that's brutal. He's the next guy that's gonna get a mini redesign, in my opinion. I'm not sure how you're gonna get him in right now.
I hope the redesign is not being able to click him in the character select, like just you know, a broken.
Okay, so
interesting chat. I am a bronze level player for sure. Just peaked in plat, but bronze level quality. I just mained Mercy to plat, so
yeah, you're masters in my heart though.
Those top 500 Mercy.
Left guy plays Mercy.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a question about what do you guys? Let's see. I miss. Oh man, just keeps scrolling on me. Thoughts on how Hammers will do once they move to NA?
Well, we'll see. That's a big question.
Yeah. Nope.
Mm-hmm. My gut instinct is that they're gonna have they're going to have to change some things up. I think that there are some issues, whether that be getting some new players or just modifying their play style. Right now, with the little that we've seen, I've seen of them anyway, the Hollywood Hammers are going to have to go through some hammering on the forge to really.
In my opinion, it's very similar to perhaps even Ninjas in Pajamas or Old Complexity, where their best player is a Roadhog. So how are you going to play around their best player being a Roadhog? Because Snows and Lewis, I think, is their best player.
Yeah.
I'm just interested to see Roadhog-centric teams in general post-patch to see how teams really go around that. Again, it feels like team-centric Roadhogs will fare much better than the Roadhogs are known for.
Right.
Just forging their own path.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, I think that's going to be it for questions this week. Again, if you guys want us to, or you have a question for us and you want us to read it out next week, go ahead and email that to theoverview@chainmanby.tv. And emails always get highest priority. So you guys will definitely make it on the show, unless it is just some, ridiculous troll type of question. But why don't we wrap up, do some shout outs? We'll start with the left guy first. So we'll start with you, Gil. You want to do any shout-outs? Exactly.
Right guy being left guy.
Exactly. It's your first time on the show, too, so it's like a real pleasure having you on.
Yeah, it's been really fun, yeah. So I'm mostly available, so
if there's y'all. Ladies, check his Twitter.
Mercy Maid, by the way.
Mercy Maid. Oh, boy. Yeah,
I actually learned some things about Mercy by watching this recent event. Because watching Nuki, who's in chat, I did some of the observing over there for Tig TV. We saw a lot more of the supports, which I really liked.
Yep,
and I watched, true. And I know how bad I am at Mercy, so because of how amazing they were. But I do want to I want to shout out some people that really, because I'm up there on stage for contenders, but the real people that are carrying the team, Jacob's our production guy, Voitech and his admin team of they are just total badasses.
Insanely good.
Yulong, he is, well, he does a lot. I mean, he's basically responsible for everything. He's the quiet storm. And then Karina, who was the person who really worked at getting all of the assets and visuals looking good. They are the ones that truly carry the contenders team. So, and there's a whole lot of other people. I wish I could just outline everyone that's involved, but the production definitely makes us look real good. So.
I would echo the same sentiment. We literally have the easiest job in the room when we're doing stuff at Carbon. Those guys are amazing, and they make us look good, so I appreciate it.
You know, one thing would be nice with productions, I have to say, when at the end of events and stuff, nobody ever does the credits. There should really be credits where people's names and things like that.
We want to do that. So the problem is getting an asset that is approved for that. So.
And now if we do the credits, though, can we just get a cheesy '60s TV era closing credits song?
And this is exactly why people don't do it. Because people try to do too much with it.
And then finally, at the end, just add a few sponsors there, so it's really old times. Like, and special thanks to Doritos and them.
Absolutely helped us. They're the real shout outs. Yeah.
Not that they're related at all to what we're doing, but hey,
Maybe one day they'll sponsor the overview. Hex, you want to do some shout outs? Where can people find you?
Twitter is at Hexagrams. That's about it. I barely tweet. I'm awful at it.
What? Yeah, this is the guy that does the plugs and he can't plug himself? What?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm out of practice for my sellouts. I also offer CP. This is Tempo ZP on Twitter. He's amazing. You should totally follow him.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to do that. This is Hexagrams. He's at Hexagrams. He has a great Twitter picture. He's the guy you should absolutely follow if you want to be sold out to.
None of that's true.
And I am at Gil Frost on Twitter.
Yeah, it's Gil Frost.
I do tweet sometimes. I'm trying to because I'm not very good at it either. But
we get told
none
to
of
tweet.
Us are, man. It's...
Well, I love hearing from people, yeah.
Well, I'll wrap things up, guys. Thanks for doing the show, the three of you guys. And thanks for everybody for watching. You can check out the VODs if you missed any of the show earlier on youtube.com/ChainManV or any of the previous episodes you can find there. You can also listen to us again on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play. And that's going to be available, at least this episode will be available a little bit later tonight. But follow the show's Twitter at TheOverviewGG. You can follow me at ChainManV. And that's going to be it. So for ZP, Hex, Gil, Frost, and myself, Champion V, we'll see you next time. Later.
Follow fish sticks.